Hello, hello, and happy 2017, and welcome to the newest episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. Thanks so much for downloading and listening. You can check out more episodes and previous content at dsmsports.net, and follow me on Twitter at njh287. A brand new year, a lot of new stuff in digital and social media and sports to talk about, and I'm going to be catching up with Diamond Leung today. He is the managing editor at Sport Techie. You probably know Sport Techie. They are at the center of everything going on in sports tech. They know it all, including a lot of social and digital media stuff, wearables, everything under the sun, advanced analytics, and I'm going to be talking to Diamond about all things sports tech, what really drives their publication, as well as what's up and coming, what to watch for in 2017. So definitely a good conversation with Diamond coming up. But first, this episode's helpful tool. And this episode's helpful tool is nothing special. It is something that I use pretty much every day, and it's the Pocket app. As you're especially browsing Twitter, browsing the internet, browsing a blog, browsing any other social media networks, and you come across an article that you know you're going to want to read, kind of add it to your reading list, I oftentimes will save it to my Pocket. That once I download it there, it's I'm able to access it in an offline environment. It's kind of my reading list for the day. It helps me kind of keep track of what I want to check out, especially when you're just scrolling through the old timeline or the Twitter feed during the day and you see something that's a highly recommended article or a topic you definitely want to see. It's a quick way to save it and become your reading list. And eventually Pocket gets to know a little more about you. We'll have recommended stuff as well. But I primarily use it just to sort of be my automatic place to save things and be able to read them when I get time to do so. So check it out. It's the Pocket app. You may have heard it before. If not, check it out. I use it every day, and that's this episode's helpful tool. All right, we'll be right back to talk to Diamond Leung. He's the managing editor at Sport Techie. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool, and now I am really psyched for our guest today. We are joined by Diamond Leung, managing editor at Sport Techie. He's been around sports and sports business, sports tech, a little bit of everything for a long time, and thanks so much for coming on the podcast today, Diamond.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Really psyched to talk about all things Sport Techie. Just been so cool to see that business and that vertical grow, and obviously you as managing editor are really starting to play gatekeeper probably to what tech is being written about and what's really up and coming these days. So before we get into our main discussion, we want to, of course, get to know you a little bit. You have a really interesting career path. So tell us about how you've gotten to where you are today, all your stops along the way, and any tips for folks that want to do what you do.
Yeah, for sure. Well, again, thanks for having me on, Neil. It's been kind of a whirlwind for me the last few months, kind of getting settled in at Sport Techie, and just kind of here, I just basically manage kind of the editorial direction of where the site is going. And, you know, the fun thing about it, I think, is it's constantly changing. It's constantly adapting and growing and going in different directions. But I think right now we're finding ourselves on really solid footing and adding staff writers and making sure we have all the bases covered kind of with anything that goes on in sports and technology and that intersection. As you know, Neil, it's a growing area and an area that people are becoming increasingly interested in. I think people are investing their money into it. You're seeing mainstream athletes really take to it in all sorts of different directions. So it's kind of a fun time right now to be in that space.
Let's go back, Diamond. Let's go back to your college days, UCLA, coming up as a sports writer. I want to hear about how you've gotten to where you are.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I went to UCLA, covered football, basketball. Was an editor there as well. After that, my first job was covering high school sports for the Riverside Press Enterprise. Mm-hmm. Did that for a couple of years, and then at that same newspaper, I eventually covered the Los Angeles Dodgers beat. Covered that team for about 2 years and saw a lot of different things with Manny Ramirez coming aboard and Joe Torre, and just a lot of interesting times there for sure. After that, I moved on to ESPN.com, where I was blogging about college basketball on a national basis, and got a chance to really learn a lot about that sport and how it really kind of takes on a life of its own, especially during March Madness. So it was definitely a fun time to do that. Eventually moved on to MLive.com, where I covered the Michigan State beat. Got to cover some football, basketball, mainly basketball. But got to cover the Rose Bowl as well, the NCAA tournament. Really get to kind of experienced a different part of the country for me, having grown up on the West Coast and moving out to the Midwest and seeing what Big Ten basketball and football is all about. Eventually moved on to the San Jose Mercury News, the Bay Area News Group, where I was covering the Warriors. When I first came on, it was Mark Jackson's, it was his final season, what ended up being his final season. And so the following year, they won the NCAA, they won the NBA championship in Steve Kerr's first year, and eventually covered the 73-win season as well, with the Warriors falling just short against the Cavaliers. So it's kind of been a whirlwind up until now, and since then, just relocated to New York, and on we go with Sport Tech. It's been a fun ride for sure.
Definitely a hell of a career path. I mean, very exciting to get experience writing about a lot of sports for a lot of different publications and all over the country. And what kind of has been your takeaways, and what skills have you really developed that serve you in your role today at Sport Techie?
You know, I think what's really helped me, if you just kind of look at, you know, the career, is just the versatility. You know, I've been kind of thrown onto different sports, and you think you know a sport maybe when you first, you know, just watch on TV and follow it a little bit, but you really don't know much until you get on a beat, I think, and really kind of see the team every day, interact with the coaches, make phone calls, get to know everything there is about the industry. And you know, I've been fortunate enough in my career to have a chance to do that in multiple sports, whether it's college, professional, you know, baseball, basketball, football, just a lot, learning a lot of different things on kind of a really intimate basis. Mm-hmm. And I think since coming into the tech field, that's really kind of helped me because, you know, for tech, you know, I'm kind of new to this as well. And, you know, the same rules apply really in terms of getting to know the major players, getting to find out where you can get all the latest updates, building up sources, making sure you put those phone calls in and go where the information is. I think all those things apply. It's been fun to kind of, you know, take a back seat to, you know, the balls and strikes, and, you know, in some ways see that, you know, on the tech side, and see where, kind of the major impacts are being made.
Well, before I jump on the Sport Techie side, I do want to – I hope you can indulge me for just a moment. Is the beat writer here to stay, or is that – I mean, obviously it's evolving, but, you know, if we're talking 10, 15 years from now, will there still be beat writers?
Absolutely. I think the, you know, the beat writers, and, you know, I'm biased, of course, but, you know, they're the people on the ground level. They're the foot soldiers for the information getting out. Without beat writers, a lot of times there are no bloggers. They're not getting that information that they can kind of snap up and write about. You know, columnists, you know, find it more difficult to really have an inside look into what's going on if they're not talking to their beat writers, who are there every day and traveling on every road trip. I think, you know, that position is, you know, while it might be in a case where, you know, that, you know, just with all the demands, it gets younger and younger. I think ultimately that's where, you know, a lot of the good information is going to come out of. And I think, you know, it now in this kind of new era of, you know, fake news and whatnot and rumors and you know, and bad sourcing, you know, I think it's you know, I think it becomes heightened to where, you know, you have to kind of be able to rely on a certain amount of information that's accurate and true. And, you know, I think if the beat writer can't do it, then you're in big trouble. So it's going to be a position, I think, that really, you know, grows and will, you know, continue to have a major impact going forward.
Well, that's a good point. So let's shift to the Sport Techie side, of course. And now you've gone from more the in the trenches writer to an editorial role. So tell me about exactly what that means for Sport Techie, and are you ultimately helping to, I guess, drive what topics get covered and what's worthy of your guys' attention?
Yeah, a little bit of, I guess, all the above, really. You know, it's my job really to kind of craft that editorial direction and make sure that our staff is in sync and locked in and ready to kind of produce that content that really drives our site every day. It's, you know, in some ways, it's not really, in terms of the mindset, it's not really a whole lot different than what I did on a daily basis as a beat writer. You know, you find out what the major stories are of the day. You find out how to attack them. You find out who to talk to. Only now I'm just doing more of the assigning than the actual writing. And so I think, you know, for me, it's kind of a, you know, fresh take on a new topic and just a really intriguing time, I guess, to take on this kind of topic that's really grabbed a hold of, you know, a lot of different people in a lot of different ways. There's just so much when it comes to just those two things, sports, technology, you know, teams are doing it. Players are doing it. The average person dealing in fitness is doing it. The average television viewer is considering how to figure out cable TV and a different way to do it. So I think there's just a lot of different people that our site appeals to, and it's kind of my job to make sure all those audiences are catered to.
And I'm not gonna make you say it, so I'm gonna say it for you that Sport Techie really is probably if not the top among the top voices in that spectrum, in that greater sports tech field, about what people, what high level decision makers should be paying attention to, what teams and organizations should be paying attention to. So I mean, it's a hell of a role to really help set that agenda, so to speak. And how do you go about doing that? Is it just is your inbox always full of press releases? Do you kind of look at what else is out there? Do you use the metrics or any sort of public metrics to see what are people talking about? How does that all work when you are determining that editorial direction?
Well, I appreciate the kind words, Neil. And, you know, it's a little bit of a lot of what you're saying in terms of kind of how we judge what's out there. Your inbox is full. You've got people pitching you, PR firms coming in. You're doing your own research in terms of what's going on out there that other people want to see covered. So I think a lot of times you really consider the idea that I think, you know, those who aggregate the best are going to win. And I don't mean that in terms of aggregating content. I mean that in terms of aggregating ideas and seeing what's really appealing to people, what people want to know about, what people want to learn more about. And I think if you kind of put your resources toward covering those things, I tend to think that the site will be successful. So, you know, just it's like I mentioned earlier, it's just so many different topics. And so many different things that people are interested about today in sports technology. But for me, it's about finding out where, I guess in a beat writer sense, all those sprained ankles are coming from. Where are the little updates? Where are the new developments? What is the news that people should be hearing about? So every day for me, it's about analyzing those situations and making sure those are well reported on.
And do you guys see yourselves at Sport Techie as sort of setting the water cooler agenda, so to speak, and what's going to be talked about maybe at South by Southwest Sports or CES Sports Track? And do you kind of say, okay, we are going to lead the agenda, or is it more reactive? You know, we need to pay attention. If we're getting a lot of PR pitches about VR, we better, you know, step up our game on VR. I mean, sure, it's a little bit of both, but how do you sort of see it?
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit of both. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head, though. I mean, we want to be the leaders in that space and be driving conversation. If Sport Techie's talking about it, that's what you should be paying attention to. That's what every you know, site in some ways strives to do. But you know, I think we can be the leaders of that space. And I also think we definitely react to what you know, companies are doing as well. You know, if there's a, you know, right now one of our hottest topics is, you know, virtual reality. I know, you know, for sports tech. I guess people that have been in sports tech for a long time, that's kind of matured enough, you know, an area that's matured enough to the point where it's kind of hitting the mainstream a little bit right now. And I think that's why we're so focused on it, because it's gone from being this kind of cool thing that the techie insiders know about and are able to play with and mess around with, to now you're seeing it marketed to the average Joe sitting on his couch at home. And I think that's kind of our bread and butter, is like, hitting those kinds of topics where somebody who doesn't really know much about sports technology can read our site and find out more information about it, and at the same time get kind of all the latest industry updates on, you know, how, you know, something like virtual reality is growing and continuing to grow. So I think for us it's about capturing, you know, really all those eyeballs and catering to any audience, any kind of person that wants to read you know, about sports technology.
And now we're sitting on the precipice of 2017. Everyone's kind of looking back on 2016 now. So as you look back, and maybe VR is among those top topics. What do you look back on in 2016 and say, this this technology made a big push or had a lot of buzz in 2016, or were there any technologies that kind of started off in 2016 that you thought would, or people thought would be big, that just kind of flopped?
Well, I think in the sports tech industry, I think you're seeing a lot of conversation about esports, which is kind of the obvious cliche one for the people that really follow it. Everybody in that industry gets asked about, are you going to invest in esports? Are you going to get involved somehow? Because there's so many eyeballs attracted to it when you look at, the streaming services that draw millions and, the millennial and the young eyeballs that are attached to what's going on there. I think, it's something that's definitely going to have to be noticed. I think in some ways, the underrated topic, that I've really paid attention to, is augmented reality. Mm-hmm. When you think about, the popularity of Pokemon Go and how that's worked out, that's just kind of, I think, scratching the surface of what it could do for data overlay, for how, sports broadcasts of the future are done, for how sports, how viewing sports through a different lens is done going forward. I think there's a lot of ways that's going to grow, headed into 2017, and as TV and teams, I think, figure out how to be unique in that area. So I think those are the two that I've really kind of been focused on, and in terms of seeing where they grow. They're not often maybe the hottest topics that we cover, but I think as far as things that are going to be, big and things to watch going forward, I think those two would be the ones.
No, I agree. I think AR kind of gets lost because people, it's been around a long time in some form or fashion. I mean, look at the first down marker in football, yep, or whatever, but now it's starting to get to that more, I guess, self-service where you can overlay something just through the camera on your phone, as in the Pokemon Go example. So it'd be cool to see how that plays out in 2017 for sure. And where do you see as sort of that critical mass, that inflection point for when these technologies take off? Is it when the Joe Schmo sitting on his couch at home can access these technologies, or is it more when the right exec just gets a hold of it, whether it's, Vivek at the Kings, Sacramento Kings, or what kind of leads these technologies to go from incubation and an idea at a startup to something that's really, that can really scale?
I think it's when you mentioned it first. It's when it really hits kind of the mainstream, where just the average person that doesn't know too much about it has access to it. In some ways, we're starting to see that right now with virtual reality. But I still think like the average person doesn't own a headset.
Right.
It's not especially affordable. I mean, yeah, it is if you really want to go do it. But in terms of accessibility, what does everybody have right now? I think it's a smartphone. And I think, it was proven with Pokemon Go how much you can do with that phone for AR, and now you're to the point where, you mentioned it, sometimes you're using AR and you don't even know it. And, as teams, I think, start to maybe capitalize on that. We recently saw a report where, the New England Patriots have talked about wanting to use AR as part of the game viewing experience. And they're upgrading their Wi-Fi at their stadium in order to make that happen. How that, plays out, we'll have to see what kind of bells and whistles they attach to it. But I think it's very interesting that, you could see kind of this personalized, first down marker, all sorts of stats, kind of things really come to life before your eyes, kind of on an individual basis. And I think, that's maybe where something can find success, is once it starts getting into the average Joe's worldview. If it's accessible, I think that's something that could lead to that technology, specific technology, being very successful.
So we could see a Patriots game next year where you throw your phone over the play and maybe see how fast that ball was that Tom Brady threw, and then how fast Gronkowski was running when he caught it, and all those kinds of crazy technology things.
You might be able to even see what the PSI is of every ball. Who knows?
Oh gosh, don't get me started there. do you see it really becoming more influential when it is affecting the performance side on the field? Like when a Bill Belichick says, hey, we got to try this. I'm not going to do a Bill Belichick impersonation. It'll be terrible. But if he says we need to try some of this VR technology to train our athletes, our players, Or is it more when the business side gets on it and says, hey, we can use this for fan engagement? I mean, I know it's happening on both sides of the coin, but do you feel like there's one side that's really that really moves the needle more than the other?
You know, I think they're both, very, very strong in terms of, leading to kind of that mainstream success. Obviously, we're in VR, we're seeing things like Striver being used by, by different teams to help their athletes, train and really learn and grow, but yeah, I mean, it's going to take, if Bill Belichick slams a Microsoft tablet and says, like, I don't really like using this thing. Well, I think that's, it's one man's opinion, but it's one important man's opinion, too. If you can't appeal to, maybe a Bill Belichick that isn't necessarily the most technologically savvy guy, that's not a good thing, I don't think. I think it is important to reach that mainstream. And you're right, it works, not just from the team's end in terms of getting their athletes prepared, but, on the fan side, too. If fans aren't getting into live broadcasts of virtual reality, and I think that remains to be seen at this point, I don't know if it's going to work, long-term as a mainstream thing, going forward. So I think there's definitely the fan part of it, but there's the player part of it, and you're seeing that from a lot of different things that go on with sports technology.
And I think that sweet spot seems to be when you do get that repurposing. If Tom Brady or Jimmy Garoppolo can throw on a headset and do some training using the Striver platform or a VR platform, well, a fan will enjoy that just as much to be immersed in that experience. And same with some of the advanced data analytics that you look at, like MLB StatCast, and the data they're throwing out there is hugely valuable for sports teams to evaluate players, but also it's great fan fodder for content and for stuff that they want to enjoy. So it seems like there is some of that sweet spot in between where, hey, what we're doing here can also work over here. And have you seen that as well?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's where the broadcasting is really going to have an impact on that, because I think when you put it on TV, that's when it gets mainstream, right? And so I think as some of these kind of next level analytical stats get measured by some of these whether it's wearables, whether it's things on the field, like the trackers that the NFL has experimented with in footballs, I think if you can provide that information to broadcasters and that information becomes something valuable and to the fan, who can then be looking through it and watching through AR glasses or whatever it's going on, I think that's where it really kind of takes off. Is it's easily accessible. It's something that just gives you kind of that next level access to what's going on the field. I think that works both for the players and the fans.
And I think you hit on a really key point there, and it really is. Does go back to the broadcasters and the production folks, the ones who are presenting all the stuff to fans, and if they decide to start throwing in some advanced stats or the pylon cam and stuff like that, different views, it can hit home to fans. But it really becomes, now we have all this data, we have all this new technology, how can we make it digestible for fans and in a way that it's not going to alienate them or them go, what the hell is WOBA or VORP or any of those other sort of acronyms along the way. And so it seems like there's a really high importance of how can we best communicate and I guess visualize this data to folks. And that's not just happening in sports, but probably in every industry out there, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, like, the teams are going to want to keep the technologies they use as private as they can for a lot of the times. If they've got the secret weapon to make their teams go, why tell anybody else? It wasn't that long ago when, something like Catapult was new, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, only, a handful of teams were starting to use it and measuring, kind of this baseline for practice, how any individual player should be practicing and measuring how much output they do and everything that player tracking does. Now you see kind of this having taken on in the mainstream for a lot of different sports teams, and to the point where the leagues are tracking it. People want to know this data. It's being collectively bargained how this data should be used and owned. So I think a lot of different things come into play, and just with that topic alone, you've seen it go from, hey, what is this thing, to very quickly, why aren't we, which team isn't doing it? How are teams, not just doing it, but how are they gaining the best insights from it with big data and breaking it down from that standpoint. So I think technology can go by very quickly in terms of how it completely impacts a single sport, a single team, an industry. So it's important, I think, that it can be easily explained to the mainstream, not just the users, but everybody else involved as well.
If only sports weren't so damn competitive by nature, right? Who knows what we could have out there? And there are probably some uses, and let alone some insights from combining a lot of data out there, that if you put it all together, you could find some pretty cool insights. But at the end of the day, teams are, and if they're doing something different, they think is allowing them to succeed over others, they're going to keep it close to the vest, so to speak, especially if you're talking about a Bill Belichick or some of those others out there. Are you finding that from your time at Sportechie, even just as an observer of the field, are there leagues that are really standing out above the others, that are dedicating themselves to this new tech and new technology, new media, or is it really just happening in piecemeal, or whether it's certain teams that are carrying it out more than others?
I think every league, has its teams that are doing, some of them are more, I guess, advanced than others, or more open to kind of adding that than others. But really, from the league standpoint, I think, one of the real standouts is the NBA and what it's been able to do with not only, kind of doing deals in terms of, adding a second spectrum to replace SportView, being kind of at the forefront of making sure those kind of stats are available to fans, and maybe even to in the future to in a gambling sense, but also just what they do for the fan experience, as far as League Pass goes, as far as even building off of that and creating kind of this zoomed in shot for mobile viewers where they can just follow the ball, the action on the ball. They can now watch, weekly games in virtual reality off League Pass, to the point where last week they, launched a game where you can basically, compete with others and, as part of a mobile game based on, in real time of what the action is going on the court says. You can now, I guess, pick one player per quarter, hope that player does really well in some sort of a, not just a daily fantasy sense, but a real time fantasy sense, and be able to play in that way. So I think, it's a league that has always been open. We've known, as far as, whether it's social media and different kinds of video to make the game more accessible to fans. And now we're just seeing that with the glut of technology that's coming in, it's really embracing things at a very fast pace. A lot of other leagues are doing great things as well, but I think the NBA stands out from there.
And the NBA certainly is the only league probably that you haven't heard about. They're being overly protective of social media content and little GIFs and vines here and there. Why do you think that is, that the NBA does seem to be the one that people hold up as the most willing to try new things, to be experimental, to expand abroad and all that? Is it just the leadership at the top with Adam Silver? Is it the owners of the teams that are more forward thinking? Why is it the NBA consistently seems to be the innovator out there?
It seems like all of the above. I think if you look at the history of the league, I know it's older than probably the two of us can say, but from what I know, the league, it wasn't as big, as the NFL coming up. It wasn't as big, certainly, as Major League Baseball. It had to fight for viewers, and really, I think when you looked at it from a media standpoint, having the NBA beat writing job wasn't necessarily the best job to have. Oftentimes it went to maybe kind of a more experienced person. Oh, hey, you want to cover the NBA? All right, go ahead. We'll give you a shot. Everybody, I think, was more focused on covering baseball, covering football. We're talking about 30 years ago. And I think it had to fight for eyeballs, and they did that by doing things a little bit differently, catering to young people, throwing their doors open to different segments of the population, and making it mainstream. And now you've kind of see it take off is kind of, it's a popular sport. It's not just a popular sport, but it's iconic in a lot of ways in terms of what the players do, what the teams do in terms of, establishing themselves as kind of these, worldwide images of, the world's greatest athletes going at it. So, that's not to say the NFL doesn't, is an absolute monster, and still, even with whatever numbers are out there, but I think that it's helped basketball that they've been in that underdog role and that they've had to fight for whoever's going to follow that sport, and now I think they're reaping the benefits of it.
Okay, it's astonishing to think that 35 years ago that the NBA Finals, NBA playoffs were not even shown live. They were on tape delay for a lot of the country. And for us to think about that, especially fans that were born in the 90s, to consider that just seems mind-boggling. But that was the case. And I think that's a good point that they haven't had that long legacy that the NFL and the MLB and even the NHL have rested upon for all these decades, I guess.
Yeah, it's just been, I think, amazing for them to get to where they are now. But I think technology has always helped them. And right now they're kind of at the forefront of really doing what it takes to kind of push things forward. They've still got a ways to go. They've got to figure out how to get wearables into the game, when other sports are doing the same thing. But I think, but inside those offices, I think there's an energy there in terms of helping establish how the fan of the future is going to watch the game, and how the players, going forward are able to train and get better.
No doubt. A few more minutes left with Diamond Leung, he's managing editor at Sport Techie. I do want to talk about all the investment going on in sports tech right now. And you look at starting back May with the Dodgers and their accelerator program with their incubation program, and then others, it seems like they're sprouting around all over the place in Atlanta and Philadelphia and all around the country. And does it seem like there's just this really burgeoning field of sports startups? I mean, you're probably getting hit all the time with your inbox with various startups, or is it going to eventually become this more consolidated industry? The bubble's going to burst, so to speak, and the big players, the IBMs of the world, are going to be the ones left standing.
Well, I don't think it's so much a bubble that's going to burst, because I think teams are always, and why they're interested in accelerators, that they've always been interested in new ideas. Like, it ultimately comes back to, how do you make the owner look good? And I think when you're an owner and you're being seen as, hey, it's this cool, not just a cool thing to get involved with accelerators and startups and things, but hey, this stuff could really help us out, whether financially from an investment, or maybe, a certain startup is drawn to you that has kind of technology that you get to know a little more intimately and put into play, I think that's going to help a lot of teams. And so, it really kind of, is a good situation for a lot of teams to put themselves as kind of this, beacon of light for some of these startups to gravitate toward. Hey, like, we want to get involved in X team because we see them as forward thinking. We want to, help their team and see what investment we can get. So it seems like a win-win for everybody. But we'll see when kind of maybe some of those companies start not doing so well. And then we'll see kind of who stands by who. But as of right now, I think it's a great way to share ideas and, really learn, have kind of different industries really exchange ideas. And that's kind of what we're about as well, at Sport Techies, kind of covering, the dynamics of that, having these mainstream teams really kind of take interest, I guess, in some technologies that might be out of their worldview and they just want to learn more about. So it's really intriguing to us.
Is sports just that sexy industry that gets a lot of the eyeballs and the attention, as opposed to, you see a lot of these technologies that are certainly playable and, no pun intended, or feasible in other industries, other verticals. And is sports just seem to be where there's money to be had now, or I guess where you can affect change more quickly and rise up more quickly?
So many different people want to work in the sports industry, not necessarily for a money thing, but just, I mean, it's kind of where it's at, right? It's where everybody goes on a weekend to get away from everything. And it's in that sense, that's a mainstream concept. Like, you want to be where, the fun is, where the action is, where all the eyeballs are, are on. And I think people gravitate toward that. Companies do, you know, rich people do, obviously, in terms of get involved in sports. And you know, obviously, lately, we've seen kind of this, the new gold rush has created kind of, you know, the wealthy tech investor type. And, you know, those are now being obviously thrust into the sports industry. The leagues are open to it, you know, having ownership coming from that background. And, you know, in some ways, they're really taking on leadership roles in terms of this kind of infusion of sports tech into mainstream athletics. So I think it's a great thing for everybody. But to see it really rise up, I think is definitely kind of an interesting thing and trend that we're definitely paying attention to.
Let's talk about that briefly, before we get to this episode's travel stats, just a couple more minutes here with Diamond. You obviously covered the Warriors, lived in the Bay Area for a little bit. They had a ton of ink spilled about them the last couple of years about how they have these forward thinking, owners. They kind of Silicon Valley brought to the NBA. Did you find that organization really was forward-thinking? Did that play out? If so, how did it play out?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you have kind of the Warriors owner, Joe Lacobs, obviously comes from a venture capital background. You have Peter Guber, the co-owner, who's, you know, this Hollywood, you know, veteran insider that everybody seems to know. And now he's getting deeply involved into sports tech, you know, investing in everything from, you know, virtual reality with NextVR to esports. And it's a team that's kind of run like a startup in a lot of ways, even though they're this kind of behemoth that we're thinking of. They're run like a well-run tech company. And, you know, I think it filters on down to the team as well, where, you know, when I was covering them, at least, it seemed like players 1 through 7 on the roster were all interested in tech, getting involved in Silicon Valley, making their own investments, you know, taking on even a casual interest in apps and all sorts of different things related to things going on in the Bay. So it's definitely kind of this, you know, it's a program that's set up for a lot of people to be successful. And, you know, the part that I found, you know, pretty funny was, you know, the front office always kind of downplayed how much, you know, analytics they were using, you know, how it's only kind of, you know, a portion of kind of their decision-making process, which I believe is true, actually. But, you know, this team got named, you know, Analytics Team of the Year by Sports Business Journal, you know, so it's something that they've, you know, in some ways tried to downplay, but I think they're you know, they're knee deep in kind of, you know, being known as, you know, not just a sports team, but also a sports tech team. And I think, you know, that's where they are. That's you know, how they'll continue to be portrayed. And we'll see what it means for them going forward.
And I think certainly the players there, and even the, you know, even from a larger standpoint, the younger up and coming millennials or Gen Z players coming up in the game now certainly are helping this acceleration. And when you have a player who wants to try out a wearable, who wants to know about the advanced analytics and how much you know, he's exerting during practice, and that's certainly I'm sure from your time covering sports and seeing the veteran who might go, I'm not wearing that shit, to the rookie who wants to know every piece of information he can, how much are the players really affecting the acceleration and the rapid movement of technology?
I think, you know, just by them accepting a lot of the stuff, and, you know, they're the team that uses Catapult as well. You know, to my understanding, I don't think there's a guy that's saying, like, hey, I don't want this. I don't need you to be, you know, using the stuff and bring it up my contract, you know, extension talks. And, you know, I think, you know, a lot of guys are just interested in improving, to the point where, you know, just, not too long ago, you saw, you know, kind of one of their, at that point, one of the last players on the roster, James Michael McAdoo, he straps on a Halo neuroscience, you know, headset and says, hey, we're testing some of these, and everyone kind of goes crazy over it. Like, what is this thing? Like, let's go report on it. I think these guys are open to trying new things and being out there in terms of, you know, I guess, wanting to be positioned as someone that wants to get better. You know, I think that they find that valuable. They find it valuable to be kind of in this, you know, tech mecca, Silicon Valley, to be moving to a new arena that's set to come up with all this kind of I'm sure they have that thing built up to where they can attract the fan of the future. So it's really all set up, I think, for the players. But I think the players, it's ultimately going to be on, dependent on them to see how far that a lot of this Main Street stuff is able to go. Are they able to go along with this stuff, you know, at media day, you know, during games, after games and events, to cater toward what the new fan is going to demand out of their dollar, their ticket, to have more access to these guys.
One last thing on that before we get to this episode's shareable stat. Is there this lingering, I guess, fear, uncertainty in the back of everyone's mind that we're going to hit that point, that critical mass point where all of a sudden there's too much information and, you know, agents and players are like, I don't want the team throwing this against me, or vice versa. The teams are like, I don't want them to show me that there's this intangible, like, lesser known stat that we're tracking that shows this player is adding more value than his surface stats may show. I mean, obviously we're having this, we're going to have so much information available that it might get to the point where the privacy concerns come to play. Is that sort of this lingering thing in the back of people's minds?
Yeah, I think so. I think ultimately, you know, everybody knows that it's going to be an inevitable thing, that there's all this information out there. That's the way the agreements are being written up, where you're seeing, hey, like in the future, you know, there's a lot of kind of casual language in some of these deals, whether it's with, shoe companies or things like it allows for basically future innovation to take hold. And, for teams and organizations to understand that, hey, there's going to be stuff in the future that we don't know about right now. We don't even know what it is, but we're going to allow for it. We're going to have to account for it. And I think for the current technologies, a lot of that stuff is going to be haggled out, you know, in how they address, wearable devices, in how they address data, who owns it, who can use it, who has access to it. So I think everybody understands that these things are going to be factors going forward. It's just a matter of how they hash it out, how they regulate it, and how they, I guess, how they embrace it to the point where it can be used for both parties.
And all that, my friend, that uncertain future but exciting future is why it's a fun time to be in your position as sport techie. And shit, man, I had so much more questions to talk through. There's so much more we can go through in this sports tech field. But we're going to have a little more fun with you coming up in our Diamond Dish segment. An awesome name, if I do say so myself. Oh, man, we'll be right back with that. But first, this episode's shareable stat coming right up. Lots of interesting stuff with Diamond Leung, managing editor at Sport Techie. Really just so much to look forward to in the months and years to come. And Sport Techie will be the center of all of it. But we'll have a little more fun with Diamond coming up in our Diamond Dish segment. But first, we have this episode's shareable stat. And this episode's shareable stat is all about Facebook video. And it is a stat that shows that when you have captions in your video, it increases viewing time on average of 12%. This is a wide-ranging study. Looked at several Facebook videos over a period of time in the recent quarter, and it showed that there was a 12% increase in average viewing time when captions were included. It's no secret that if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know that a lot of Facebook video viewing happens in silent mode. I've seen as much as 80%. I'm not sure what the current stats are now, but certainly a lot of videos, especially in the first few seconds, are greeted on silent mode, and so you have to capture the attention. And if you have an awesome video and you're only a handful of fans, or even if it's a majority of fans, a lot of them are missing out on what's being said, and you can capture their attention, get them to watch and engage with more of the video by including captions. It's a pretty easy thing to do. You can certainly look up on Facebook how to do it. You basically have to include an SRT file, a subrip file, with the captions included for the video content. Definitely a great thing for fans. It makes your video look better. You're going to increase viewing time, and definitely give it a shot. It's a small thing that can go a long way. So that's this episode's shareable stat, a 12% increase in average viewing time on a Facebook video when it includes captions. All right, we'll be right back to have a little fun in our Diamond Dish segment. So listen up. All right, that was this episode's shareable stat, and now we are back with Diamond Leung. He's the managing editor at Sport Techie. Diamond, you did awesome in your interview. We learned all about sports tech. Are you now ready for a little Diamond Dish?
Yeah, let's go for it.
All right, number one, your favorite article that you've written for Sport Techie so far, and why? Or just one you've assigned as well. I know you do just as much writing as editing.
Oh, man. It's hard to just pick on one. One I recently did was I sat down with a company called Iceberg, and it's kind of this deals with hockey player tracking, and it was fun to kind of get to know the people behind it. They're a startup coming out of Russia with a guy that and I guess the person that owns it is kind of an industry veteran in terms of, creating mobile phones, in Russia. And, they're now kind of, moving in on this kind of industry that, in hockey, at least, we just talked about a lot about the NBA and how they're doing player tracking. And hockey is still kind of, a little behind on that sense because it's more difficult to track, with all these players kind of falling all over themselves, bunching up, you got the puck flying. So I think, I mentioned that story because I think it just represents the type of story that Sport Techie is really interested in terms of, a company that has an idea that has the knowledge and that applies it and that, gets kind of a taste of the mainstream. They've got, deals with at least one NHL team, other pro hockey teams as well. And it's just fun, I think, for me to, and I think a lot of our staff writers to kind of understand what goes into it, to explore all aspects of, a certain story, be able to kind of get the human interest story behind it, understand where a company has come from to where, how they got there, and to just really tell that story. A lot of times we deal so much on information and, the tech side of things. But I think for us to really understand how crazy it is for an idea to come from something to then, get to the point where you're able to talk about it and see pro teams, find use in it. I think, that's kind of the ultimate for me is, just kind of the human side of it as well. Not just, the coding and the tech stuff. I think that part's interesting to me as well. And, that was just one time where I got to, really tell that story.
Oh, I bet you there's probably so many interesting people you meet throughout throughout this industry, and I think hockey too, for that matter. Just to go on a quick tangent, hockey is that sport I think where their fans are just craving that next level data, and same with their teams. Starting to see a lot more analytics focused gurus becoming more involved in hockey ops. You look at the Arizona Coyotes just hire a 27-year-old guy who started a stat based firm back in the day. And it's really, I think hockey is definitely that sport that's on the precipice of just embracing big data and like no other, as long as they have the hardware to get it there to them.
Yeah, for sure. It's, everybody's going to be getting involved somehow. And I think, it's just, I think the companies are going to sort themselves out with, what works and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. And, hopefully, I think soon we'll see the leagues really embrace it and see what technologies really kind of, I guess, pave the way for the future.
All right, number two for you, Diamond. The most underappreciated piece of tech that has affected sports in the last decade or so, and why?
Wow. That's a good one. Most underappreciated. Probably like something along the lines of like League Pass or Sunday NFL Ticket. Red Zone, mm-hmm. Those kind of things, you take for granted because I think it's so easy to access and have on your television. But in terms of like the amount of work and the technology it takes to actually like pull something like that off seamlessly and not have it be all buggy. And, I think there, it's like airplane Wi-Fi, right? Like, for me, like I'm not going to complain that it's not there. Or it's not working because, have you ever thought like, the miracle it takes just to get an airplane in the air, right? And so like I think that kind of stuff is a lot of times, maybe underappreciated where, hey, like, it's pretty magical to be able to go from game to game, you know, down to when the next scoring opportunity is. I think that's really changed the way a lot of television viewers have kind of seen the sport. And we don't really think about that too often. But you know, with the NBA doing more stuff in League Pass, like I mentioned earlier, just the incredible access that fans have to watch, I guess, any kind of sport, you know, at any time and with so many different options. I think that's the thing that's really taken off.
I can't wait to have grandkids so I can tell them, back in my day, I had to wait till the next day or the night after to see the highlight of that touchdown. And they're complaining that they missed it in real time because Red Zone didn't get there in time. And, oh, gosh.
It used to be you need to wait till the next day to read about it in the newspaper, right?
So I remember in high school calling a 1-800 number to get the score update before we had internet on our phones. And that just makes me feel old thinking about that.
Yeah, sure. That's why I just think, a lot isn't paid attention to in what goes on in television, just because of, I obviously we know like a lot of, hey, what's ESPN doing? What's the next thing there? But, in terms of just the basic access to having sports, I mean, we're kind of in the golden age for that I think.
No doubt. All right, number three, Foy, going back to your time covering the NBA, tell me your favorite player to interview during your time with the NBA.
Favorite player, wow. I guess it'd be Draymond Green, when you really think about it, when you can kind of just, riff off on a topic and hear all those. For me, Steve Kerr was great to deal with, just in terms of, him being kind of self-deprecating and able to, speak intelligently on so many different topics, whether it was gun control, and now you see him talking about, raising stuff about marijuana use, and I just thought he was very thought-provoking and when he didn't want to talk about something, he would just respond with a joke, and kind of, play it off. But there's so many different personalities that you meet, in the NBA life especially, where it's hard to break them down. But yeah, I mean, Draymond was up there in terms of kind of, you never know what he was going to say, and when you expected one thing, you got the other. So it was always interesting.
Did you cover Draymond both when he was a Spartan and in the Warriors?
Absolutely, yeah. I covered his senior year at Michigan State, so got to know him pretty well.
Was he just like that at Michigan State, where very very gregarious and very open?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, when I got there, I basically missed kind of the, maybe his first and second years in the league. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm told, I wasn't there, but I'm told, he wasn't as, demonstrative as he is now in terms of things. You've got a role to play, you're a rookie, but everybody could see that his interviews were going to be really good coming up. I think he, even his rookie year, he was already getting regular access to a radio show. Now it's it's to the point where when he speaks, everybody listens. So it's taken on a life of its own, but it's always fun to see it from I guess the college and the pro standpoint.
Yeah, what a unique perspective is it. So let's go back to your time at M Live and tell me, while you were M Live, the most memorable game you covered while you're working for M Live. It could be any sport.
I'd have to say the Rose Bowl that Michigan State played against Stanford. Not so much, I guess, of the game. I mean, it was an exciting game, obviously, for Michigan State fans. If people remember, they had the big stop on fourth down to clinch it. Mm-hmm. I just remembered how they hadn't been there, how Michigan State hadn't been to the Rose Bowl in so long. And like I mentioned earlier, I went to UCLA. I, in some ways, started my career covering games at the Rose Bowl, like very often, more so than anybody else, just because of the school I was attending, the school I was covering. Maybe you take it for granted a little bit, to later on, all those years later, see kind of this team from the snowy Midwest, achieve its dream of getting there. And to kind of, make that turn up the drive up to the stadium and see what the weather was like in January compared to like in the Midwest. I mean, it's something you really don't forget in terms of what that experience means to a Big Ten school like that. I know now we're in the college football playoff era. You can argue that a lot of these games are devalued, depending on which year it is. For tradition, a traditional game like that one, that one was pretty cool to be at, just to see that.
Oh, that's really cool, yeah, for sure. Number five for you, Diamond. Tell me the best pro sports venue you have been to and why.
Best. I guess that could be answered in a lot of different ways.
I mean, however you take it to mean.
You know, I was blown away by Wrigley Field.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of I wouldn't consider it the most comfortable place to cover a game, but just in terms of the history there. I mean, when you walk into the visitors clubhouse, it's really, really, really small, like really small. It's and then you got to walk through the tunnels to get out to the dugout, and you know it's not a really nice place to be, but I think that's what makes it cool. You know, when you're just walking on the field and the ivy's out there, I think that's a pretty cool experience.
I would agree there.
Yeah, in terms of best venue, as a sports writer, just any place where the Wi-Fi works. I mean, it was one of the. I always found it really funny. You know, I haven't been to the Golden One Center yet. You know, but you know, it's like the most tech savvy arena ever, I guess, at this point. You know, from what I've read, from what we've covered, but you know, the arena before Sleep Train Arena, one of the worst Wi-Fi venues ever. I think I've sat probably the equivalent of a game just behind the scenes because I couldn't get Wi-Fi. You know, it's just awful press seating. You know, it's taken a 180 now, but it's yeah. Any place you know that a sports writer is not feeling comfortable in, it's probably not often going to feel comfortable for a fan either.
No doubt, for sure. Number six for you. I'm going back to your days as a sports journalist, and you still are a bit these days. Tell me your number one tip for an aspiring sports journalist, someone who wants to make their career in that field in the future.
I think probably just go where nobody else is at, you know, in terms of kind of a general sense. You know, like a lot of times kind of people think sports writing is maybe, you know, the group interview and, you know, everybody's got their mic in there shouting questions. Like that's kind of the vision of journalism, right? Where, you know, everybody's throwing out their question and making sure their voice is heard and all that stuff. Well, that's all part of it. But I think a lot of it is, you know, it's ultimately finding those stories that nobody else has heard of. You know, making sure you're unique in that, and coming up with ideas and going where nobody else is. You know, attending that media session that no one else bothered to go to, making sure you got all your bases covered. I think there's there's obviously an element of kind of, you know, hard work and perseverance that goes into that. But I think, you know, there's so much groupthink right now where people a lot of times don't do that. And I think that, you know, I've always found that to really help me at least. And, you know, I even think it helps me now at Sport Techie where, you know, we do want to be doing things a little bit differently than everybody else and, you know, really going where, you know, other sites aren't going. And so that's part of the fun for me.
I think that's a tremendous insight for sure to be able to differentiate yourself nowadays. All right, number seven for you, Diamond, getting to the end here. The top one, two, three, whatever metrics that you pay attention to in your work with Sport Techie, whether it's traffic to stories or social media shares, and what are some of those metrics that you look at on a daily or weekly basis?
I mean, I look at metrics, but, you know, as we know, metrics isn't everything. Mm-hmm. I think one thing to pay attention to is, like, obviously who's reading your site, and we get a good report on that every day, but I'm in the minority here, but I take a general feel with things. You know, I'd like to see obviously who's sharing our stuff, how many people are doing it. It's fun to kind of look at that, but you know, I think if we're doing kind of a solid job overall, and I know that can be subjective, but I think if we try to serve as many different readers as possible in the best way and providing them with quality stuff, you know, whatever the metrics are, hey, that's going to work itself out. You know, I think it's more important really to kind of establish yourself as, you know, as a site that's to be relied upon, you know, for great journalism. And I think, you know, as that kind of takes shape and we continue to build that up, you know, I think that's where the metrics are going to pay off in the future.
No, I think it's a refreshing take to look at it, not just be seduced and be obsessive over the numbers every day and which story's getting which hits and all that good stuff. All right, back to a little bit of fun, finishing up here with Diamond. The best food that you've gotten in the Bay Area, and now you've been in NYC, the best food to get there.
You know, the best food to get in the Bay Area that I've found is actually Burmese food, because I don't seem to be able to really get that at really good places anywhere else for some reason. There's just a glut of, you know, people always ask me my favorite restaurant there, and I always just say Burmese food because it's really, really good. A lot of people haven't tried it, and so, get a lot of
what the hell is Burmese food? I gotta ask.
it's kind of like Thai food, but you know, it's not Thai food. You know, it's kind of like Chinese food, but it's not Chinese food. Get the tea leaf salad and tell me how it goes.
All right, how about out there in New York? Have you found a top food place out there?
Oh gosh, I've probably been a little bit too busy to find the place. I actually haven't. I'd actually be curious in hearing. I'm sure once you tweet this out, maybe some people can help me. But you know, I'm not big headed enough to say I'm a foodie and all that stuff. But yeah, I haven't found my spot here. I guess that's the answer. There's a lot of
you get to go and try new things and experiment and find that good spot out there.
Yeah. Well, here's the interesting thing is that I can't tell you one place. But there's been enough great places where I can tell you that this might be the food capital in my mind. Like there's not one that stands out because there's so many. So everything is like really, 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 really good. So that's all. That's all I got from there.
Hey, enjoy it while you can before it starts to get old hat and you've been to everywhere. I don't know if that can ever happen out in New York.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, last one for you, Diamond. I gotta know. You can go chalk if you want, and go with the team you used to cover. So tell me when if we're talking later in the summer, who is going to be the 2017 NBA champion?
I've got to think the Warriors are going to get their act together, right? they do have Kevin Durant. They still have Steph Curry. They have Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. I think they'll end up working themselves out. They lost the Cavaliers recently. They've had some other, you know, not too pretty looking performances on defense. But I ultimately think they will get there. I think over time, you know, talent wins out. Not to say LeBron doesn't have talent, but I do think that as a team they'll figure it out and get back over that mountaintop. It's not exactly the most scientific predictor, but I think that they'll have it figured out.
And there you go, folks. You heard it here first. The NBA champs, they're gonna get over the specter of losing the 3-1 lead, and they're gonna come out on top this year. All right, Diamond, had a lot of fun. Our Diamond Dish segment. Now your chance to take over the podcast and tell us briefly your social media all star to follow. Someone on Twitter, who they are, and why they're worth following.
Whoa, social media all-star. I've got to go with my staff writer, Mark Burns.
That is a good one. So tell us briefly a little more about Mark. I'm sure everyone listening knows who Mark is.
Yeah, well, Mark is quite a guy in terms of what the amount of contacts he has. Not enough people, I think, are following him, which is maybe, why I'm stunned. But he's kind of, he's all over social media in terms of, you know, the contacts he has, in terms of the topics that he's covering, in terms of promoting kind of these, you know, wild kind of stats that you can't get anywhere else. He is all over that stuff, and so my feeling is, you know, I learn from the guy every day, because I'm new in some ways to this field. Mark has been there. You know, he's on par with a Darren Revelle in terms of that kind of information that he can crank out. I think he's a guy that people should really watch, not just because he's on that 30 under 30 Forbes list, but Mark's gonna be doing big things. He's definitely a guy that people should be following.
Someone I'm lucky to call a friend, and I also have theories that he doesn't actually sleep.
Yeah, he should sleep more so his boss can get some sleep too. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, at Mark J Burns 88.
Definitely recommend following Mark. And how about you, Diamond? Where can we find you as well as all things sport techie on digital and social?
Yeah, for sure. You can find me at Diamond 83, at Diamond 83, or you can just follow Sport Techie's general coverage at Sport Techie.
Definitely recommend following both. And Diamond, it's just been so good to pick your brain a little bit today about all things sports tech, and you know, where it's come and where it's heading. What an exciting field, and I'm almost jealous of you. You get to kind of be there and see it all play out, and no doubt we'll be following along with Sport Techie to keep up with everything.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, no, it's definitely a fun time for me, and I appreciate everybody out there who's been reading our site. Thank you so much for having me, Neil.
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting year ahead. I'm sure you got an inbox that's full of ready with new ideas to look at, so I'll let you go. But thanks again, Diamond, and best of luck in 2017 and beyond.
All right, thanks, you too.
Well, thanks again to Diamond Leung, managing editor at Sport Techie. Really enjoyed talking to him. Really talented, articulate guy, and doing some really cool things and leading a great team there at Sport Techie. But that'll do the episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks again for listening and downloading. Have a great start to your 2017. As always, I am your host, Neil Horwitz. Go and hit me up on Twitter at NJH287 and check out the website for more content and previous episodes at dsmsports.net. Until next time, we'll see you on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.